Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 84. I am indeed John Davis, last time I looked anyway. And we have a full house today. And I'm going to start with producer, writer, two-wheel, and reporter Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
Our road test producer, Ben Davis, is with us.
I'm here.
A little louder, guys. Writer, Patrick Lucas.
Greetings.
Yeah, very good, Patrick. Step right up to the microphone. Greg Carlos, our assistant producer.
I am here as well.
Oh, brother. All right, here we go. We've got a lot to cover on this day's show, and we've got coming up on MotorWeek a convertible special. It is that time of year when it's worth putting the top down, enjoying the weather before it gets too hot. And we cover a lot of ground on that show, but today we wanted to talk about three of the smaller convertibles that might be considered reasonably affordable, but definitely would be considered more city-friendly than some of the convertibles in the past. For your consideration, we're throwing out the VW Beetle convertible, the Mazda MX-5, what everybody knows is the Miata, and the Smart Fortwo Cabriolet. So that's the fodder for us, guys. How do you feel about those three? And let's not go in any particular order. Let's just have a good time. Small convertibles to be seen in. Which ones are worth driving? Do any of them strike your taste? Pros and cons. Here we go.
It was our pleasure to drive a Volkswagen Beetle convertible.
He's always ragging on me, man.
What are you doing, reading off a script?
With the TDI, you would think, like, convertible, diesel, that could be a disaster because you'd be smelling diesel fuel all the time. But, you know, it's new tech diesel. It's great, and I think they did a good job with the Beetle as far as it's still, you know, despite the manly makeover, it still is what it's always been. It's a cute car that people love to look at and see, but very few people actually buy.
You actually can see out the back, though, when the top's down now.
Correct. They did make the top a lot more compact.
Yeah.
And fold.
When the top is down.
You know, yeah, we're talking convertible weather, but when that top is up, that's got some horrible blind spots. And without blind spot monitoring, I was pretty scared to drive that on the highway.
What do you do about that? Are there any convertibles out there that don't have that problem?
Yeah, you just...
That's pretty much goes with any convertible. Yeah.
Buy a convertible and put the top down.
What do you do with the commercial? You just wear the ski mask.
All the Miata. I mean, it wasn't... That's true. All the Miatas we've owned collectively wasn't that big of a deal.
Probably because I guess
there's no back to look through.
Yeah, there's no back to look through. It does seem like if you go back and look at all of our tests of convertibles going back from the years, it's probably the single biggest complaint. All right, so the Beetle convertible's one, and we briefly touched on the MX-5. Has that car gotten old?
Not yet.
Not to me.
This gen, to me, is really hung around longer than I think it should, for sure. I'm tired of looking at this generation. I never did like this restyle.
You're old, man. Get out of here.
Oh, come on, man.
You think it lost some of that quintessential little roadster look?
I owned three first-gen Miatas.
I had one. Still miss it.
When this gen came along, it looked too much like a comic book koi fish kind of superhero Japanese comic book design to me a little bit.
So you're not worried that the next one's going to be basically shared with Alfa Romeo. You're kind of welcoming
I'm anticipating
that.
It. Yeah, I look forward to it.
From the pictures, I mean, that they've released, or at least mock-ups, it seems like it's definitely a welcomed refresh, because I agree with Ben. It is it's almost a cartoonish car right now, looking-wise, but once you get in and drive it, you kind of forget about it.
And all the piano black they were using there for a while, and I wasn't a big fan of that body color stripe inside on the dash. But it is fun to drive. It seems like you sit a little higher up in these than you used to in the first-gen Miatas, though.
Well, first-gen, your butt was about 6 inches off the ground.
I like that better.
Yeah.
The door was up a little higher, like a popped collar jacket. Mm-hmm. This door seems a little lower.
Still one of the best cars money can buy.
There's no doubt.
Fun to drive. This is my first time driving one. I think it's like my most favorite car that we've probably had here.
You know,
and it had snow tires on it, too.
Yeah.
Good for you, because it really is a terrific little car. I had one of the first gens, and it was a sad day when I sold it, and I still miss that car. I'd buy it back if I could find it. Well, speaking of cartoon cars, the Smart Fortwo Cabriolet, is this a convertible for anybody? You know, no, wait a minute. You see them running around, so they're obviously it has a market. Would you go for the convertible version of it versus the coupe? I mean, people buy them because they're easy to park, they're small, they do get good mileage. Yeah, they're not perfect on trips because of the CVT transmission and everything else. But beyond that, is it a viable convertible?
No, because you have to totally dissemble the. It's like the Fiat,
where
the center goes back. Then you can take off the side metal pieces. Then you got to store them back in the trunk. It takes way too long. I mean,
unless you have a garage, you can just keep it like that. I'm going to argue the opposite. Ooh, I'm going to say that it is a viable convertible for this reason only. Because it's a city car, and it's a lot more fun to drive around a city at low speeds, under 40 miles an hour with the top down, than it is to get on the highway with the top down.
Because then you just get blown away.
Yeah, people think that'd be great. Let's get on the highway, put the top down, do 60, 70 miles an hour. That's torture. It's loud. There's traffic all around. It's annoying. You get dirty and gritty. Mm-hmm. It is not pleasant.
Yeah, if anybody's got long hair, it's basically... gets tangled from the wind.
Those days are long gone for me. But, you know, like one of the best comments when you said you felt like you were in a wiffle ball getting blown around.
But, you know, it's the last one we had, and it's in, took the top off, drove around in it, and I actually liked it because I felt like I was still protected because the basic frame structure comes up so high. It's a lot like the Fiat 500 Cabrio, but yet I had the open air feeling. So I actually thought it was a good combination.
You were in a sardine can, though. Regardless of the roof,
I don't know. I mean,
how protected
it didn't bother me. And, you know, I took it out on the interstate and I was toe to toe with some big rigs and didn't get blown around. I guess I'm just saying, I think the car, the Smart Fortwo, sometimes gets a little bit bad rap. I think it is a purposeful little vehicle. It's got an audience. But would it be my first choice in a convertible? No. It's a manual with an automatic clutch.
Yeah.
And it jerks you back and forth.
If you drive it like a manual, it's better. I was trying that. If you like let off the throttle when it goes to shift, and then after shift, get back on the throttle. It's like much more agreeable.
No, you're absolutely right. But if you give it too much gas, it gets rough.
It gets worse. Yeah.
You've got to be fairly gingerly with it. So anyway, of the group, the Beetle convertible, the Mazda MX-5, or the Smart Fortwo Cabriolet, choice?
Mazda for sure.
Yep, Mazda.
I give the Smart Fortwo a close second, this particular one, because it reminded me of the A-Team van, the color combination.
Oh, wow.
Almost the same size, too, right?
Anyway, it's convertible weather.
I cannot transition. Cannot do it.
Thinking of it really badly there. Where's the riders when you really need some help?
So let's move on to
the next.
I think we're done. Move it. Lightning round. Our panelists have 2 minutes to debate a trending automotive topic. When time's up, they hear the bell from our podcast producer, Michelle Parker. Okay, here we go. Now that the auto show season has wound down, let's talk about the impact pre-show vehicle reveals are having. And that is, more and more of the automakers are releasing images early on social media and their websites, not to mention hauling journalists to a faraway city to see them. Does it really create more buzz, or is it buzz kill to have so much information out there beforehand? Do we lose something without the element of surprise? What do you think?
I'd say it's definitely more buzz. You get your stuff out there early, and you kind of not only do you get it out there, but you give a little bit. You know, you give a taste, you don't give it all. And instead of being a small fish in a big pond at an auto show, you can be that day's news and be everywhere.
What about when they show the whole car beforehand?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
Really?
Yeah.
You still know details, powertrain, stuff like that.
Get it out there.
Yeah, I think like if for a big name like the Cherokee, I think the pre-release definitely built a ton of hype. If you're like leaked, I don't know, some boring, I'm not going to name any names, but if you leak some like boring car, like no one's going to be really excited about it beforehand or at the show. So I think if it's a big enough name, you can build extra hype with like a pre-release.
It was interesting at the New York Auto Show, the CTS from Cadillac, the early pictures came out, and that was not, I asked the GM folks, I said, was this a real leak or a fake leak? And they said, no, it was a real leak. They were not happy about it until the pictures got out there and they realized that it did create a lot more buzz for the car. I must say I've changed my mind over it. I used to get very upset because everything was out before we went to the auto shows. But now, because of social media and all, you know, it does seem that a lot more people seem to be interested in what's going on at the car shows than they used to be before.
Yeah, no publicity is bad publicity, right? I mean, just get it out there. A couple people tweet it. All of a sudden, it's the news of the day. And
I wonder if Jeep would have released those pictures of the new Cherokee if Jalopnik hadn't have basically had those spy photos. I mean, because that sort of did push their hand a little bit.
I think if anything else, you're going to see it more and more. Like some of it act, you know, is a real leak, and then some of it's going to be like fake leaks. You know, yeah. People sneaking pictures out and stuff. So.
Very good. Well, we didn't hear the bell. There we go. I guess we wound through that topic, but we're just speeding right along here today. Okay, let's go to our Motor Week mailbag. Remember to submit your question to us at Motor Week, and if we choose your answer to choose your question to answer on the podcast, you'll get a fabulous Motor Week T-shirt, one size fits all, folks. Here we go, and this is from Steven. I've heard a lot about, and just exactly what we were talking about again. What'd you do? Read ahead, Brian? We've heard a lot about dual clutch transmissions, but I don't know what the advantages are or how they work. Can you enlighten us?
Yeah, I'm not the engineer of the bunch, but...
That's right. The engineer of the bunch got it wrong.
To speak it in simple terms, basically the transmission is instead of having all the gears in order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in an automatic, you'll have it split in half. Odd gears will be on one side, even will be on the other side. When you're in first and you're on the gas, it'll pre-select second gear on the other side. Then when the shift just happens much quicker, instead of having to release, switch to another gear, engage, bam, it just goes instantly from one gear to the other.
And it's basically a development that was started in racing Formula One, I guess. Do you like it? I mean, we just talked about the which is not quite a dual clutch, but the manual transmission with an automatic clutch in the Smart. We are seeing, obviously, this transmission in a lot more vehicles, particularly high-performance vehicles. They've come a long way since the first one started. Do you like them?
I mean,
what is it about it you like?
Well, they definitely have advantages. I mean, you know, you got with two clutches, you're quicker shifts. Actually, since the no torque converter slippage, you're actually getting a little bit more fuel economy.
It's better on fuel economy, yes.
The only disadvantage is it's kind of hard to get off on a slow start from 0 to 5. It's a little jerky. But actually, what Mazda did with the new 6 is they got a small torque converter in addition to a dual clutch. So they're using, you know, an older technology and a new technology. The small torque converter helps you get off from 0 to 5 low speeds, and then the dual clutch kicks in to give you all those advantages.
Yeah, dropping knowledge. Thanks, man. I didn't know that. Good,
Pat.
Yeah, I think when you combine that with some nice paddle shifters, and you get, I don't know, I guess it's software or whatever. I mean, because you can be mapped and engineered differently. You get a nice lightning quick shift.
Are you, you know, the younger folks sitting around this table, which takes me out. Are you missing a manual transmission?
Well, I am.
Well, I guess we're kind of spoiled because we drive so many different cars. We get enough manuals in, but...
I think it's the 40-somethings that probably miss. Well, that's probably not true either. I think if anybody were to miss a manual, it would be the 40-somethings. Probably the younger guys haven't really grown up with too many manuals. But getting old like I am, it's a dual clutch transmission is great because you don't feel like owning a manual transmission on an everyday basis. So you can just put it in drive. But when you do feel like kicking it down on the back row, you can just select a sport option, and you're pretty close.
Or somebody would come up with a fake clutch pedal. You know, you hit a button and it drops down from underneath
placebo
the dash. Yeah, placebo.
Sure,
so.
Fox Meta, we've said something. Sure, the Japanese company has had that on a board at some point in time. But I think the arguments for manual are becoming less and less. I mean, automatics are getting better fuel economy. Mm-hmm. They're quicker on the 0 to 60 times, and a lot of the dual clutch stuff is quicker.
It really comes down just to driver involvement. You know, what do you do with that other foot? Well, thanks very much, everybody, for taking part in our Motor Week podcast number 84. As we draw this one to a close, I want to thank our audio engineer, Julian Cookman, this is her second podcast with us, our podcast creator, and I will get it right this time, Bob Mixter, not his brother Bill. Our podcast producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell, who we had to make sure rang at this time. Thank you all for watching Motor Week on PBS and on Velocity and for listening to our podcast. Till next time, I am John Davis. Thanks for watching and listening to Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.